This is Housebound. I'm Chris.
I'm Holly.
I'm Ashlyn.
I'm Greg.
And you're invited. Welcome to Housebound, a podcast we made because we needed company. In it, we talk about things that are on our minds, and today we're continuing our discussion about our favorite books. Last week, we talked about series that we really enjoyed, whether current or from years ago as kids. In this episode, we're going to talk about solo books, books that aren't a part of any particular series. In fact, I specifically request that we don't talk about that because then it allows those books to kind of stand on their own merits. So let's see if our standalone books are different at all to the genres of our favorite book series. Not because it's a competition, just because I'm curious. Greg, start us off again, I guess.
Okay. So my standalone book is definitively different from the genre. Because fantasy and thriller was kind of my series genre, and this one is more Christian satire. So this book is the almost true story of Ryan Fisher, the story behind how I came across this book is, first off, I need to explain a part of my character is that I like books to be in mint condition. I request that anybody who borrows my books washes their hands before they read them. I also get them to read the books at, like, you know, like probably under a 45 degree angle, just to make sure that that
which
spine
means you can't see any of the words,
that spine stays nice and smooth.
I feel you.
So
I mock him for this endlessly.
Yeah. I'll admit it's a little weird and is probably preventing a lot of people from gaining access to a lot of great books. But anyways, this is the choice I have made since I was a young child, and it has continued. I think I just like the feel of new books. Anyways, so you can tell that I don't really enjoy shopping in used bookstores because generally you're not going to be able to find a book that looks nice and pristine. And usually if it is nice and pristine, that meant that it was probably not a great book to begin with because nobody read it. Anyways, but I did find this, The Almost True Story of Ryan Fisher, at a used bookstore, and it was the only one that was, like, perfect, mint condition, felt really good, and it even had, I'm a sucker for, like, bonus features, and it even has, like, some bonus features at the end, like insights, interviews, and more. There's a bunch of different little things there, so that kind of drew me. I bought the book. I think it still has, $7 for $7. From the used bookstore, and started reading it. And it's this story of this real estate agent who realizes from looking at the ads that if he can market himself as a Christian real estate agent to Christians, that'll broaden his pool of people that he can have access to and make him actually more of a commodity and make him stand out more. So he's not a Christian, but he pretends to be a Christian real estate agent. And then he takes it a step further and is like, wait, if I could be a pastor of a church, I could potentially get a lot of money, like a mega church. I could potentially get a lot of money. and so it's this whole story of the kind of this real estate agent who's not a Christian, who realizes that he can use faith and Christianity specifically to generate an income by playing on people's emotions and what they believe. And it's actually like a really good commentary on the church, on faith, on belief. And it's really interesting. I mean, even Oprah makes an appearance in the book, and it's great. So hands down, would recommend.
That's funny that he's like, in order to do my job better as a real estate agent, I want to have another full-time job as a pastor.
Yeah, I think he ends up setting aside his real estate ambitions and just dives head deep into being a mega church pastor. And he is successful in some ways. So I won't spoil anything too big, but
that's crazy. Yeah. My book is quite similar to my series, but it's actually listed as science fiction rather than fantasy, which I would say it probably that's accurate. And I don't read a ton of science fiction. I like fantasy more, but science fiction isn't too far out of my realm. This book is really difficult to explain to people, so I am going to read the back of it. But it is called Biting the Sun, and it's by Tanith Lee. And I read this book first when I was in junior high, I think, and I got it from the school library. And I'm a little surprised that the school library had it in there, because I'm sure that you'll see when I read the back here. It's just got some like interesting subject matter. But because I got it from the school library, I didn't own it. And then I found it again when I was in high school and read it once again, just from the school library. And then I didn't have it until there's a used bookstore here in the city called Westgate Books, and you can put books on like lookout. So I just gave them the title and the author, and when they got one, they called me and they said, "We have your book." And so that was probably like 15 years after I had read it. I just was like, I need to figure out what this book was and get my hands on it. So here's the back of it. It's a perfect existence, a world in which no pleasure is off limits, no risk is too dangerous, and no responsibilities can cramp your style. Not if you're a Jang. A cast of libertine teenagers in the city of 4B. But when you're expected to make trouble, when you can kill yourself on a whim and return in another body, when you're encouraged to change genders at will and experience whatever you desire, you've got no reason to rebel. Until making love and raising hell, daring death and running wild just leave you cold and empty. Ravenous for true adventures of the mind and body, desperate to find some meaning, one restless spirit finally bucks the system and by shattering the rules strikes at the very heart of a soulless society. So it's really interesting because the first half of the book is written very much within the constraints of what the character is feeling. It's very, they call them Jang. It's very teenager. It's very Jang. And it's like difficult to follow. And then after you get to this like turning point for the character, they start delving into some historical records. And the book actually gets easier to read because the character is thinking more like the ancients, which was us. Well, maybe us. They don't really explain the ancients at all, but the book gets easier to read and they find purpose at the end, which is like just great. And so I was surprised that it was in junior high school library, because like, yeah, the first half of the book is them just doing whatever they want to satiate any desire that they think they might have, and they're expected to do drugs and get married for just a day and have love and all of the things and suicide and come back in bodies that they design themselves, and there's no real death, and without any of that there's no purpose. And at one point she goes and looks for a job, and some of the older people have jobs, but their jobs are to push a button at a particular time. And if they're late, then the button just depresses by itself anyway, because everything's run perfectly. So there's not even purposefulness in having work. So it's just this like really interesting idea about purpose and identity and how they're wrapped within each other.
That is cool when like series can like bring in like some really deep themes, you know, into it, and like actually explore. It's not just about the story, you know, but actually it's about exploring a theme and really digging deep into that. So yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, it seems like a pretty bleak existence. like you said, purposeless. So it's interesting that it's got something to say about that, because it would be easy to create a dystopian future where, like, instead of everything being desolate wasteland, everything's pristine and perfect, and there's just no purpose to anything. It would be hard to write a redeemable character in that, because they would have to come to understand what it is that can be redeemed when they have nothing to compare that to. Like, they don't have any concept of redemption. So yeah, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's a great story. I recommend it highly.
Is it old? How old is it? Like, do you know when it was written?
I have it here. I can look it up.
There was a piece of lingo at the back of the, like a phrase at the back of the book that definitively showed that it was dated. Yeah.
Copyright 1976.
Oh.
76. Yeah.
Wow.
Cool.
Well, I cheated, and instead of picking my favorite book, I picked my favorite book within three main genres that I read. Spoiler alert, none of them are fantasy, because I don't think I have ever found a fantasy book that I've truly loved. We could maybe go through like my whole lifetime reading list, and there might be one or two that you could categorize as fantasy that I liked, but it'll never make my top 10 if it's fantasy. I don't enjoy it. I don't know. Just not my thing. So one genre that I really like and I read a lot of is thriller / horror that's featuring like this intense female character who's like in control and complex, and I love it. So I love...
Oh, so Twilight.
Absolutely. No.
Sorry, I just alienated like half our audience, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Probably a fifth.
Half of our audience has to be Twihards. You know
is
it.
Is Twihards a word?
I feel like it is, but let's not get off topic here.
So I've loved every single book by Gillian Flynn, or Gillian Flynn. I'm not sure how to pronounce her first name, but she's the author of Gone Girl, is fantastic. I loved Gone Girl. Soaked it up. But she also wrote Sharp Objects, Dark Places, and the short story The Grown Up, all of which are fantastic, and I highly recommend you read. They all have really complex, intense female leads that are just awesome, and I love them. And then another genre that I read somewhat is Christian nonfiction, and my favorite author there is Sarah Bessie. I've read three of her books, Jesus Feminist, Out of Sorts, and her latest one is called Miracles and Other Reasonable Things. She's from Canada, or at least she lives in Canada right now. Just writes about God interwoven between stories from her life. She writes really honestly, but she's also a very, very funny writer and has some really, really good lines. I really connect with a lot of the thoughts that she has, and so I like reading what she's putting out. And then another genre that I've read a few of is memoirs or autobiographies. I haven't read tons, but I have enjoyed the ones that I have read. And my favorite by far is Paul Kalanithi, I think is how you pronounce his last name, but he's the author of When Breath Becomes Air, which is an autobiography / memoir, because he's passed away, but he was a neurosurgeon who was diagnosed with cancer, and he was writing this book in the last few months before he died about his experience with life and with death, working on the brain. He you know, is familiar on that topic, as well as his own impending death. You know, he's been thinking about it a lot, and he writes beautifully. Like, even though it's in an autobiography format, it could very well be in poetry prose. It's just, it's really elegant writing, and it draws you in, and his thoughts are just like, it's as if he's singing them, and they really, really resonated with me, a lot of his thoughts, and I loved it. Loved it, loved it.
Well, it's such an artistic title. Like, as soon as you said it, I was like, that's like, that's poetry. That's crazy.
It is a gorgeous book.
So would you say that that is a favorite book of yours, just so that we can cut out everything else that you've said and save that part?
Yeah, I would say of each of these three categories, my favorite books would be Gone Girl, Miracles and Other Reasonable Things, and When Breath Becomes Air.
Okay, so if you had to pick one book.
I can't. They're totally different.
Okay, so Ashlyn has no favorite book.
No, I don't have any favorite book.
No, that's like, at the beginning, I said, I know that we all have many favorites. And so this was just like a taste, just a little nibble of.
Do you want to do that a little closer to the mic there, Chris?
It's a 10.
My book is not of a type of genre that I would say I have much of, though it is very much in line with the kinds of things that I enjoy. So this book is technically just classified as fiction, and I think that fits. When I first read the book, I kind of assumed that it would be maybe a sci-fi, but only because it dealt with like a dystopian-esque future. And so to me, that always screams either fantasy or sci-fi mixed in there. But really, when I think about it, it is just blatant fiction. So the book is called The Road. It's by Cormac McCarthy, which The Road was made into a movie in 2009. I think I picked up the book in 2009. I think that was roughly when I caught wind of the book. And it was probably because it was coming out as a movie. But the one thing that I typically stray away from when I see books at the bookstore that have either a rebranded cover because there's a movie coming out, so it has the movie poster on it, or a big sticker that's slapped on the cover that's now a major motion picture. If for anything, that usually deters me from grabbing that book. Or if I think that I really, really, really want to read the book, I'll try to find a cover that doesn't have that on it, because
really,
it screams to me that I'm jumping a bandwagon, and I absolutely hate that.
If there's a book that's been made into a movie, that like that heightens its priority on my to read list significantly.
Oh, great. Can I encourage you to read the Divergent trilogy and then the subsequent three out of the four movies they were supposed to make, because it was so good to make into a series. Anyways, I understand that some books don't translate well. Like, there's notoriously difficult books to adapt, like Dune, for example. But let's not get into that. The Road is a book at its heart is just about the journey that two people make, where their entire worlds are completely wrapped up in the existence of each other, to the point that almost nothing else matters, and they would do anything for each other to survive. And so it takes place in a barren kind of wasteland America, where something has happened that has turned, you know, the air is always cloudy and thick with smog, and like, it doesn't mention it in the book what has happened. It gives little hints, but that's not important to the book. I love those about books where they just kind of say, you know, you might never find out this information, and they just roll with it. So that really intrigues me in general. But this father and son, who for the entirety of the book go by the father and the son, because the book is written from kind of an internal monologue style at some points. And then, of course, when the characters are conversing with each other or other characters, you see the actual quotations of what's going on. But they don't refer to themselves as names. And they are basically just making this trek across the United States to get to a better place. I can't remember if it's that implied that there is a better place, or if they know that there's a safe haven or some place where you don't have to hunt every day for your food at the risk of running out of food in 2 or 3 days. But they're running on very low supplies. They're in a world where you can't really trust anybody. It's almost a little bit Mad Max-y, where if somebody shows up, you're probably going to have to kill them to get away. And so the father carries a gun with only a couple of bullets left. And, you know, throughout the course of the book, they're trying to figure out ways to save those bullets. So whether it's hunting with sticks made into spears or scrounging for cans of food that are non-perishable, things like that. But there's this like general feeling of mistrust in the entire book, because anybody they come across, it could be the last thing that they do. And so it's not super intense of a book. The movie was really good. I don't remember if the movie left out so much of the book that it was a big issue for fans of the book, but I did manage to get myself a copy of the book without any stickers on it, and so I proudly have it on my shelf. I will recommend it to anybody that is looking for a Pulitzer Prize winner book or National Book Critics Circle Award finalist. But yeah, it kind of took me aback. I think it was a phase that I was going through when I thought, oh, I should broaden my horizons a little bit. And so stepping out of that science fiction category, of which I have a lot of books in, I would give another book similar to this a try. And I would probably have to go a few years like this before I stepped even further out of that category, I think. But I did feel like this was a first toe dip into something that I could say, yeah, it's a normal book, and not have to explain to you why you need to watch all 9 Star Wars movies in order to understand it. So yeah, so books are fun.
That they are. If I didn't have books, I would not be who I am.
Yeah, they definitely have a way of shaping how you look at the world and how you interact, and even though they're just entertainment at the end of the day, right? Like, that's ultimately kind of what they're pushing, at least for. They're like time, you know, not wasters, but, you know, things that you spend fillers. Time with.
Oh, fillers, no. Yeah.
Time but, fillers, yeah.
But that's normally how they're branded.
Maybe some fiction is, but I think fiction is more storytelling and nonfiction is more information sharing. Neither of them are time wasters.
I mean, by definition, that's what they are.
No, just fillers.
No, I'm not saying time wasters. But that is like where, like, I think if I were to ask a question is like, why would you guys pick the books that you did? You know, like, is it the books themselves or is it how they affected you? Like, what is it, you know, like what drew you to those books and made you decide? You know, whether it's 10 years down the road on a podcast, you decided, yeah, these are my favorite books, you know, like what is it, the book or is it you, you know?
Biting the Sun for me is definitely, each time I read it through, I think this is my 4th or 5th time now, because I actually picked it up before we decided to do this topic at all, to read again. I find something different in it because I read it when I was so young, to begin with, each time that I read it, at a different point in my life. And just like, I definitely think that the reason that I love this book is because of me and not necessarily because of the story. And I think that a lot of people, especially in the time that we live in, would feel that way regarding the book. Like, the story is too ubiquitous of everyone's stories to not feel some sort of connection with the main character, you know? But the series that I chose, I think that's for the story. Obviously, you feel some connection with some character in there at some point, but I don't think that that series changed me necessarily, or maybe I need to read it a few more times before it does that. But so both.
What about you, Ashlyn?
I can see the connections between some of the books that I picked and ways that it might have affected me. I really do enjoy reading Sarah Bessie and the way that she interweaves her life and her the things she's learned about God. And it really, when I read those books, it makes me examine things that I've experienced and things that I've gone through in my life. And say to myself, you know, what was God teaching me in those instances? And what can I learn about his character through this event that I went through? I think when breath becomes air, you know, I've dealt with death in my life. And so it's really refreshing to hear someone else hit that topic head on and explore it from their understanding and their side of things, which is a completely different understanding than mine from that like neurosurgeon perspective, that really was able to flesh out to some extent my understanding of life and death in a way that I hadn't looked at it before, that was really, really interesting and refreshing. And I think the Rosie Project series is just a series that just brings me joy. I think that's just pure and simple joy, in that it's funny and it's delightful and it's heartwarming. And I think Gillian Flynn's books and their amazing female leads, like as often as like creepy as some of her female leads can be, they're always people who push the limits. And who will do what needs to get done in order to accomplish what they're trying to accomplish. And so it's really kind of like inspiring and like pumps you up. I don't know. And they're amazing thrillers. So.
Mm. What do you think, Chris?
I think the books that I gravitate towards, the books that I've read and that I've enjoyed, because a lot of them are just an entertainment value, I gravitated towards them strictly because they fell into my niche. And when I was younger, I was a lot more adventurous with the kinds of things that I tried out. And so there were lots of book series that I pulled off the shelf at the library and just dove into the first book to see whether it was a good enough book or not. And now I would not be likely to do that because I'm very calculated, and also books cost a lot, and also I don't go to the library as often anymore. So I bet you if I started doing the library more often, I'd feel more free to do that. But more the serious books that I have ended up reading, I think that I've read them and enjoyed them. I'm not sure how much they've informed my life or informed who I am. I'll have picked them up either on a recommendation of somebody else that thought here's a great book to make you think. And these books tend to make me think. Whether or not that informs a lot of change in my life is a different story. But I think for the most part, it's nice to read a book that has a little bit of substance to it that kind of sets you apart from the typical entertainment, just like I would watch a movie. Like I would watch lots of movies and TV shows in a row that have an entertainment value for the sci-fi or the fantasy aspect. But then every once in a while, I want to watch like a short documentary or biography or something like that, you know, just to feel more grounded, because I can get lost in the fantasy world, I guess. So to answer your question, I don't know. It's
yeah.
I don't feel like it has informed my life that much, but I can definitely see the way that I can appreciate some of the themes in the books as I get older and reflect on them, or just are interested in different topics moving on into my life. Just that maturity, I can see the that not the book reflected in myself, but I can see the growth reflected in myself based on what I am reading. So
yeah, I think for me, like the Circle series was definitely something where like the story was really cool, then I was drawn into it. But like there was allegory in it, which meant that I was automatically having to be somewhat reflective, you know, on in terms of, because it is acting somewhat as a mirror. And then with the almost true story of Ryan Fisher by Rob Stennett, which I forgot, I think, to mention Rob Stennett. So anyways, but the almost true story of Ryan Fisher is this like Christian satire. And that's going to, because I'm a Christian, that is automatically going to be holding up a mirror that's actually going to look more like a funhouse mirror, a little wonky. And it's going to show some really interesting things that I hadn't seen in a different perspective. And so, so I think for me, like, while, yeah, like I 100% appreciate a good story, I think I'm the kind of analytical person where I will always be somewhat self-reflective while I'm reading something, and stories put you into a world just by their very nature and kind of let you explore it. So yeah, I definitely pick those, I think, because they have impacted me in one way or another for sure. But I think we all are drawn to really good stories as well. And there is such a thing as just like a really well-crafted story that keeps you guessing and keeps you wondering what's going to happen next and turning that page. So
definitely. I've definitely started stories or series that it's like, oh, everything I've read about this book makes it seem like it's right up my alley. And then you get like four chapters in and you're like, I cannot do this. Yeah. It is not well written.
Yep.
Not well crafted, but everybody's different too, so that's fair.
Well, because of listening to this podcast, you really want to read one of the books that Greg recommended, asking him to borrow it may give him a certain amount of anxiety. And if you, one of the books that I mentioned you really liked and want to borrow, I likely don't own it, because I read most of my books from the library. So I, out of this list, I think I own three. And I mentioned 11 books.
Wow. There's a healthy amount of books I've read, again, back when I was a young adult, teen era reader in the library. And those books definitely all stayed in the library, but a good chunk of those were Star Wars, so you can forget about them because they're retconned now. But.
Note the hint of bitterness in Christopher's voice.
That was just slight, a slight bitterness.
Yeah. I'm very grateful for the new material they're putting out.
I own the books that I mentioned, and I would borrow them to whomever, and likely forget that I gave them to you, and you could have them forever.
That's very different from me.
Yeah.
I would take a picture of you with the book holding it and have you sign a contract describing how you are going to treat the book. So
that's so funny. Yeah, this Biting the Sun copy has like four, it looks like, cracks in the spine, and I've come across like food stains within the book because I've read it so many times, and definitely dog-eared the pages.
No, and don't dog-ear.
Yeah, definitely. Chris makes a bookmark for me when I lose my bookmark, because I just start dog-earing, and then he's like, no, 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 and he makes one for me out of cardstock so that I am always using a bookmark now.
I'm allergic to dogs and dog earring. Whenever I see both, I cringe a little bit, you know? So.
Whenever I hear jokes like that, I cringe repeatedly. A little bit.
Yep.
that was a good one.
Oh, dear.
I can embrace that one.
I have a similar displeasure of deformed books, and I think it stems from when I was younger and I didn't know any better. I would dog ear books, even from the library, and it's atrocious to me now that I think about it, but I just didn't, like, it didn't faze me when I was a kid. And so then I eventually started using bookmarks, of course, and I have lent out books to people. They have come back with, you know, cracked or more cracked spines than before, but Recently, I've been learning to appreciate the repeated use of something. So if I have books or if I have movies and I'm unwilling to lend those out, then that says, well, that says a lot of about me. But if I do, if I am willing to lend them out, then not only am I getting the money's value out of the book or the movie, but I'm also getting an appreciation for seeing it be used and enjoyed. And then I can recommend things to people and they can say, yes, I did enjoy that because you lent it to me. I was able to enjoy that as well. And so I'm just coming to grips with that. But it's a hard, I feel where Greg's coming from. Like, it's hard. As the collector in me is cringy.
Chris, I feel that you're essentially on like the path to recovery far ahead of me. So I feel like I need to come to you for counseling, acceptance. You know, through this process.
Whatever you do, you don't want to get as far ahead to the counseling as the point where Holly is, because she despises dust jackets on hardcover books so much that...
that I throw them away. I recycle them, to be
It's honest. Just, I can't even imagine.
Actually, I haven't done that for some time, but it's just irritating when you're reading a book with a dust jacket on. So now I take them off to read it because Chris...
Which is fine. You could take it off. Like, a dust jacket is just there literally to keep the dust off of it. So
sometimes the books look so good without it, though. Like, all of that cover, it's unneeded. Just look at the book. It's beautiful.
I'm with you.
But I was going to say, you both can come to me for exposure therapy if you'd like.
So before we get cut off by the outro music here, I'll tell you what address to send your hate mail to. It's Holly, care of. Thanks for sticking with us and listening to these two episodes, which are part of a single whole. It's our first attempt at doing a split episode. We can't guarantee that we will do this all the time, but it just made more sense for this one because there was so much content in the final edit.